This is an oral history of pivotal Chicanx artist Michael Rios for the Mission Murals Project. I'm Camilo Garzón. It was recorded on March 12th, 2021, in Michael's studio inside of the Noonan building in San Francisco. The voices you'll hear will be those of filmmaker Javier Briones, my own, and Michael's. This oral history delves into the facets of Michael's life that led to his career as an artist, detailing his foray into visual art and music as a young man in 1960s San Francisco, Europe, Cuba, and onward. The personal and political reasons for his focus on muralism are clarified as Michael takes us, mural by mural, on a journey through the expanse of public art he has generated throughout the years. The oral history also shows how his role in preserving and amplifying Chicanx heritage in San Francisco's Mission District led to a close, collaborative friendship with Carlos Santana. The chronicle of his successes continues into modern-day times, along with a look at his current struggles. In addition to the oral history itself, we were fortunate enough to capture a studio tour that includes Michael freely playing guitar. Here's the oral history. And I think we can just officially start. So, Michael Rios, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. Let's start with some questions about just your early life. When do you think you started getting interested in the arts, and how instrumental were your teachers and family in validating these artistic expressions and appreciating the talent?
Well, I must have been about 15 or 16 years old when I was in the 10th grade, and I got a scholarship to go to the Academy of Art. So after that summer session, I went to the director of the art school, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Stevens, I know what I want to be for the rest of my life. I want to be an artist. What can I do to come to the art school while I'm still in high school, because I still have the 11th grade and the 12th grade to go through, but what can I do to come here to take night classes, right? Because I'm just so inspired by being around in company with all the artists that come to school here." He says, "Well," and I told him, my mother died when I was 6 years old, so me and my brother and sister, we lived with my grandparents in East Oakland, and he says, "Well, okay, you can pick up a broom, and that'll pay for your nightly tuition. Just don't mess up too much into school, right? You can come here as much as you want, as long as, you know, you can sweep." So I was one of these kids, man, that I worked my way through art school on working scholarship, see? The benefit for me in having the experience of going to the Academy of Art and really learning how to draw and paint and do illustrations is that, well, those were like my formative years, right? To learn how to, at least learn how to draw and paint portraits and all that stuff, see? And I knew at some point in time that I wouldn't, you know, be handcuffed in doing just commercial art, see? And that I could actually free myself and be a little bit more of a fine artist. So I got my training as far as learning how to draw and paint and all that out of the way while I was still in high school. So right after high school, I was able to start my own business in North Beach doing commercial art with a couple of other artist friends of mine that went to the art school, see? And so it was our little business was called Winston Rios and Brown, Graphics, Art and Design. See, and that's when we went about doing all kinds of commercial art stuff, you know.
You first started in art school, were you like, this is what I want to be, and this is what I want to do forever, and did you kind of see, how did you see the future then, and how do you look at that path now?
Well, yeah, I did say to myself, you know, when I was I say, for instance, here's what I did for the Latin Grammys, right? Yeah, when I was growing up, and my first session going to the Academy of Art, this is what I did for Malo, the band Malo. I went to the director of the art school and I told him, hey, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to be an artist, you know.
When you were growing up, or even as you became an artist, there's a lot of iconographies that are, you know, Mayan or Aztec iconographies, as well as even some comic book or comic aesthetics that you see in your art. How did you engage with the indigenous imagery of the Americas, as well as with this other art form, which is comic books or just comics?
Well, okay, for me, like a lot of us, going through school, that wasn't the education that we got in learning about our culture, learning about, you know, these great civilizations that our heritage and our people come from, right? Not until you do your own investigation and your own research that you find out, right, oh, yeah, man, you know, somewhere in my blood, in my DNA, you know, I'm connected to these people back in the ancient past, see? And all that, you can say that all those things are in your DNA memory bank of your connection, your heritage, right, to your grandfather 300 years or 3,000 years ago, right? I mean, and sometimes, you know, you can spiritually feel it, right, that I feel the spirit of this Indian coming out of me, that I could have been in some lifetime, you know, in the skin of an Aztec warrior or an Aztec artist or pyramid builder, you know. Although it's hard for me, unless it's a dream, that's part of my life and part of my makeup. See, but I think it's all there in your DNA, right? I mean, it's a long line of memory that goes way back. And artists sometimes have the gift to be able to, like, tap into that mysterious energy, right, that was part of that culture way back, even back then, see? So when I could, I started looking more into, like, because a lot of times, and people would say this to me, they would tell you to kind of like turn you on and say, hey, man, these look like Mexican colors. And I'm thinking, well, how do these people figure out that these are Mexican colors, right? Just because they're so bright and so vibrant, right? That only people of indigenous, you know, origins have the ability to do these things, you know? If you're European, they're a little bit more subdued, you know, right? And low-key. But no, you know, if you're a Cuban, you're a Puerto Rican, or you're a Mexican, right? You know, you let it all hang out, you know, and, you know, it's like a parrot, you know, a parrot that has all the feathers and the colors, you know. I mean, Latinos are good at that, right? You see Huichol art from the Los Huicholes, you know? See, they don't pull any punches with their work and their colors, right? It's like, if you want to have a psychedelic experience without even taking drugs, look at their art. And, you know, and if you can read between the lines, you can see where they're coming from, see? So it's, and that's with anything, right? If people learn how to read between the lines, right, they get more of the real message, see? Because it's not always, you know, the first thing you see. You have to kind of like really, really study something, right, to see what it's real, you know, message might be. But at the same time, you know, not so abstract where people don't know where you're coming from. I mean, there's a beautiful thing in being an artist that just totally inspired by wanting to do non-objective art, you know, and impressionist art like I'm doing, like I do now, you know. And but at the same time, you know, when I get a notion in my head about, oh man, this is something's really bugging me, and so I'm gonna just get it off my chest and make a painting of it. See, so and I can do it. See, you know, if I wanted to draw, say, for instance, like a something that's gonna make people get people upset, you know, I could do that. You know, I could do, you know, dark art if I wanted to, you know. And me starting off my career as a commercial artist, there was a lot of times when I'd have to deal with art directors and ad agencies. They would kind of like have me, you know, change a particular thing that I drew because it wasn't to their liking. He says, oh, this guy looks too Indian. Can you make him a little bit more this or that? Or can you shave his nose a little bit? Or give him a little bit more of a whiter complexion?
Really?
And I would have to go along with this because, you know, it was a commercial job, right? And so, but it would really upset me thinking, why is this art director, you know, telling me how to do my work, my art? But I knew that that was just the nature of being in the world of commercial art, see, that you have to go along, you have to compromise. And at that time, being a little bit rebellious, it would bother me, you know. I mean, I learned how to do it. I learned how to compromise, you know, right? So, but not to us, not to the point where, you know, I lose my own principles. You know, I still feel strong, right, in my way of thinking about things, and you know, something that's true and something that's righteous and justice. You know, right? I want to keep that in my work.
Which, as you were saying earlier, you do have experience also in commercial art.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you worked with Bruce Atkins, for example, these things informed you also when you were creating then these murals. What were like some of these?
Well, the work that I was doing with Bruce Atkins, that was like my first commercial job as a commercial artist.
Uh-huh.
And I was sort of like an illustrator doing men's clothing for newspaper ads. And they were strictly learning how to work with ink and brush, you know, and to make ads for the newspaper, because that's, in them days, you know, that's what they did, you know. So that was just a great learning experience, right? Learning how to like really work with black and white medium, and copying, you know. Copying something exactly the way it looks, you know, right? If it was a shirt that had, say, for instance, like that cowboy shirt, you know, had a lot of patterns, you know, right? But it was in color, but you'd have to do it in black and white, right, to give people a sort of like an indication, right, that it has, or a paisley design shirt like what you're wearing, you know. If I had to do that shirt, it was going to be an ad for a newspaper, right? I'd have the shirt on my desk, and I'd have to copy exactly what it was there on your shirt. So that was a great experience learning, I mean, you know, training for me, see. And then after I left that, did that for a year and a half maybe, I moved over to to North Beach and got hired by these two graphic designers that were doing, again, commercial art, but they were doing preliminary art for what the BART system was going to be all about. That.
You were
so,
doing.
So I was doing illustrations, yeah, way back
BART,
back at that time.
Before
that
BART had, was a thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And these guys were doing also, like, say, annual reports for different corporations, you know. And these annual reports would be like at the end of the year, right? They would have all kinds of graphics and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff, you know, that I thought was cool. But a very commercial, just all commercial, you know, oriented stuff. It had nothing to do with fine art. You know,
I think that's essentially in your work that you did have all these commercial experiences, which are like, let's say, good for technique or just skill set. But then you decided to use that to create these very public facing art that also had these comments, social comments on what was going on in the mission then and there. When did you see, or when did you start to shift your perspective on like, oh, okay, I want to start making these kind of fine art? Was it after Europe, or when was it that you started being more like, I'm going to create this art in this way? about, for example, when you went to Cuba, just like these kinds of other influences really represented in your music. And this was like beginning of the 70s, right? Like, I think that the article we read was from 72.
At that time, I was doing this mural for the Mission Neighborhood Health Center on 16th and Shotwell. And so I was on one wall, and this other woman muralist, Graciela Carrillo,
sí,
was on the other wall. And so we both got to go to Cuba, and her, this other friend of mine, Peter Gallegos, who at one time was the director of the silkscreen center here in the Mission. Anyway, all three of us from the Mission went there along with some people from New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, you know. So it was about 16 or 17 people that got to go there and visit their artists, you know, and musicians. And then all this other, they took us to schools, you know, and just, you know, educated us, man, on what the Cuban Revolution was all about, because I didn't really know that much about the revolution, although, you know, I was old enough to see how, like in 1959, when Castro, you know, when it changed over from, you know, the dictator Bautista, you know, so I learned a lot, you know, I learned a lot about, you know, their socialist, you know, way of thinking and their aspirations. But to me, I mean, I was more aligned with the arts and the music, because that was what I love. But it was a great education, you know, to learn, right, that a lot of the artists that were there were also doing socialist-inspired art, right? But at the same time, they could do art that was, you know, totally not political. They could do art, and I mean, although because we had a blockade on the country after that, after Castro announced that he was going to side with communists,
the
Soviet Union,
back then.
See, and so you know, so but you know, Cuba, you know, still had a lot of relations with all these other different countries, all these, you know, socialist countries, of course, but in Canada, you know, and so the Cuban artists could still do their art that wasn't totally propaganda art, and show in museums or galleries around the world, you know, and so their art really inspired me too, because just like their music, you know, it's the drums, you know, the drums and all that inspires their energy, you know,
all
and
these
that kind
Afro
of thing.
Caribbean rhythms,
and it's totally what did it for me too. So I got these drums here, you know, and
bombos, congas.
Mm-hmm.
And in another article from that same year, there was this statement by you that you were mostly into music, like sure, art and everything, but you were also just very into music. What changed, or why did you gear yourself, your career, a little bit more into the visual arts and not pursue music further, other than, as you said, as a side gig?
Well, if that hasn't been too long since I kind of like just have not totally, you know, dedicated myself to doing half and half.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of years, you know, I did that. I would do art in the daytime because I know I could make money at doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, and there were times when I was not making money at it and still doing it. You know, I knew, right, that this is just something I had to do. Because a lot of the murals, when I did murals in the Mission, I think in the beginning, it wasn't even for money. It was just for me to prove myself to the community, right, that I had it in me to do this and put something beautiful up on a wall. And because I had dedicated myself that way, that, you know, and behind the scenes where these guys like Rene Yanez and other people had put together these proposals to the federal government to start this program called the CETA program,
right,
where they hired artists, you know, to go on different parts of the community, you know, like the WPA program, but it was CETA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I was able to get paid to go out there and do murals. See, because my first mural, again, was just a trade, right? Because this group and in the mission called MCO, we had just gathered this little gallery on 24th and Bryant called the Galería de la Raza, and it was myself, you know, and there's other Latino artists. And so because they were helping pay the rent there for us, they had asked one of the artists, they asked if one of the artists can come there and help, you know, repaint one of their walls, you know, on there on 23rd and Folsom. So I volunteered, but I said, wow, man, instead of doing just a straight paint job, I think I can see a big cartoon strip on this wall and indicating all the different little activities that go on in the mission, you know, and city life, and, you know, and I always, you know, because I have a sense of humor, you know, I always thought that, mm-hmm. you know, some kind of city life is, you know, it's like a rat race sometimes. It's a rat race, you know, and people have to, like, just, you know, scurry around like little ratones, you know, and to make ends meet and get through life. But, you know, so that's what I did. I did this big cartoon. And the reason I had done it as a cartoon thing is because there was a school, a little elementary school across the way, and kids used to walk by. I said, well, I'm going to do this to entertain the kids. You know, I wasn't really so much doing it to entertain people my age or adults. Mm-hmm. I wanted to really see what the reaction of the kids were going to be, right, after they see an artist up on a scaffold putting color up there and putting all these little crazy characters, you know.
How did they react?
But it was a serious, you know, I put some serious thought behind it because I said, okay, at that time, people were using the term pigs to, you know, describe the police, right? So I had done a scene of a guy, a cop, leading four ratones into a paddy wagon, and then another scene where they were in jail, and then another scene where there was a guy in front of a judge with his lawyer, his arm around his shoulder.
Yeah, and you're right, like, that's something that was part of 1988 SF Chronicle article. It's mentioning that your first mural in 1970 in San Francisco mm-hmm. was depicting, as you're saying, police officers with caras de cerdo pig faces harassing citizens with the heads of rats. And this mural was mentioned by Cronkite, Walter Cronkite, in national news.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a quote of you saying, it's here that I realized the power of murals. Like, once you have all these experiences and also these Cronkite national news, just bringing some highlight.
I was really surprised, right, that it would have captured that kind of attention.
Yeah.
On the national news. And he actually commented, right, there was an artist in San Francisco doing this controversial painting on this wall.
Uh-huh.
And see, the word mural, again, was not in our vocabulary, right? When I think of murals, I think of Diego Rivera, Orozco, Siqueiros, right. Michelangelo, people that did fresco art, right? That to me, at that time, still in my mind, was what murals indicated, right?
What was the change? Because mural, right? Mural in Espanol, mural. Is related to mural, which is just, you know, this art on the wall, muro, pared.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you're saying, this wasn't as part of the collective unconscious of everyone using this term.
No, they weren't. No, it wasn't. I mean, but as time went by,
uh-huh.
it was a word, right, that they would use to indicate, you know, somebody doing big art on a wall, whether right. it was on the street or in a building. See, so that's all good. I mean, but when I think of, you know, what a mural in its true sense of the word is, these great artists are what I think did real murals. See, but now, you can use that word to indicate a wall, painting on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
See, and whether it's a small wall or a big wall, and it's in the, it's in it, like again, it's the word is in the normal vocabulary of people's, you know, daily language.
Yeah, now it's as you're saying, right? It's part of the vernacular.
Yeah,
people use it, and Michael, mm-hmm. speaking of this Cronkite quote that he delivered on national news, can you tell me more about the impact of your first mural and its controversial content? And what was the impact of this notoriety or just this national news mentioning a controversial work done by you in San Francisco? How do you think that this gave some highlight into your work?
Well, first of all, you know, it was an honor, right, that they came to San Francisco and saw that what I was doing in the mission, you know, of this big cartoon strip, you know, had any kind of relevance on you know, whatever level it was. And but again, because there were some political people that saw political things into what I was doing, right? They made their own, you know, their own story out of it. But for me, again, you know, I was doing things that I thought were little vignettes of city life, you know, a guy in a park sitting on in a park bench kissing his girlfriend, three guys going to work, a guy sitting on a table in a clinic waiting for a doctor to see him, or people standing in line, either in an unemployment line or a food stamp line, mm-hmm. you know, all those things were, that's city life. And so I think if I can express it in a cartoon kind of way, right, that's what I want to do. But, you know, when you do something, you know, there's always, people have their own interpretation on what they're seeing and what the message is going to be. It might not be your message, but, you know, people have, you know, again, their own way of interpreting things. So, and sometimes, and their way of interpreting things sometimes inspires you to think, wow, I never really looked at it that way. That's another angle of looking at my art. So this is great, you know, because, but it inspired me to think, wow, there are a lot of walls here in the community that can use art to you know, beautify the neighborhood somewhat, right? If you do something really beautiful, people appreciate it, right? And if it's got some educational content behind it, right, to educate and inspire people, even the more better, see?
And you've represented these kinds of people that are like you and I, like Hispanic or Latinos, in everyday life, in your murals and in your work, right? Like as you were saying earlier, lining up for food stamps, they were being hassled by police, and you've represented them sometimes as moles, and then you see the oppressors, like for example, the police, they're pigs, they're hound dogs. What of this imagery speaks to what you were just speaking, which is we're doing the work. The people that are Latino, they're the ones doing the work, and then these other oppressors are benefiting from that work. Why did you choose those images or these, let's call it, animalistic depictions? Why did you think that, okay, I'm going to choose these images?
Because you know, there's always a way of looking at, you know, the comedy of life, you know, and the tragedy in the comedy of life, right? As where people wear masks, right? And so for me, again, city life, and even now, when you see how people, what they have to do to survive, I mean, it's still a rat race. It's still a rat race. When you see all the homeless out there that don't live any more, any better than rats on the street, you know? I mean, it's kind of like, it's not a nice thing for me to have to draw, you know, a human body and then put a face of a rat on this person, right? That's just being me being comical and I guess a cynical in a way. Not so much, I don't think, but to give it a little bit of a humor aspect. But it's a tragic humor, you know. It's a tragic comedy, and in a life like it's like that for a lot of people, you know. Even though people are born into this world thinking that, you know, life is going to be beautiful, it's not always beautiful, and it's always, you know, a lot of dark stains, you know, that are going to appear in your life, right, as you go through life.
Especially reading between the lines, if you see some of your work in the mission, mm-hmm. like, for example, at the Galería de la Raza billboard, it seems to me, from what I could research, mm-hmm. That it seems like in 1974 you were the first artist to paint there.
Yeah, that's right.
And you not only painted there, you mm-hmm. painted over corporate ads. So there's a lot of not only between the lines, there was something there that was there before that you used as a backdrop and then created something that beautified the neighborhood, but also spoke between the lines. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's true, because that billboard that I had, you could say, liberated for the Galleria was, again, a billboard, you know, in front of this bus stop, this humongous billboard advertising, again, either cigarettes or whiskey or something like that, right? So when I was, this one day when I was in the mini park working, and I was ready to go put my paints away, because I used to store all my paints in the Galleria, so it would be walking distance from the mini park. I said, man, I'm tired of seeing this billboard that's right next to this gallery, our gallery, and it's not a billboard that can be announcements of art, right? So I took it upon myself to go out there and whitewashed this commercial billboard and put my own thing on there. And the first thing I did was a cartoon again of a little palm tree walking down the street with his little dog on the side, and he's going to school and he's got a lunch pail and he's got his books, you know, and I forgot what the subjects were in the books that I had put there. And then on the sidewalk, I had a little trio, three little palm trees, one playing guitar, one maracas, and one congas. And then the houses were sort of like, you know, I don't know, you know, comic book buildings, you know, this and that. And then I wrote on the sidewalk in these big block letters, "En la misión con salsa," right? Because, you know, I was into salsa music at the time, too. So it was colorful, again, because it was something colorful, right, for the neighborhood, right? I figured, I always want to do things out there to entertain the neighbors, folks that don't do art the way I do every day, but if you do something for them, they get a kick out of it. It's going to make their day that they saw something, you know, colorful, right? And they'll remember it when they go home. They saw something colorful. And they saw the guy actually doing it, right? Painting the colors on there. So the billboard was up for about a month. And then here comes the billboard company again to slap another billboard on top of my billboard, on my art. See, luckily, again, me and Graciela Carrillo were at the mini park and we were getting ready to go home. I said, "Hey, Graciela, look what they did. They plastered a billboard on top of my art. But the paste is still wet. The paste that they paste, you know, they used to paint their paper on there." I said, "Man, I'm going there, man. I'm taking this shit off." So we went there and we ripped the whole thing off, right? After they had left in their trucks, because it was still wet, we took it all off and my mural was back up, see? But the paste, the glue, kind of ruined it, you know, and the paint started cracking. So I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to do another mural on here." So I went and got my paints and I whitewashed it again and did another scene, but this time I did a humongous guitar player laying on his back playing his guitar, and then again I wrote the words "Salsa Ahora" above that. So that's when they kind of started a little war with us. You know, they call the Galleria, and because Rene was sort of like the director of the Galleria, they call him and he says, "Hey, Michael, you know, we're having a problem here. This billboard company, man, they don't want us messing with their billboard, right?" And I said, "Well, hey, man, we got to have a meeting with these guys because, you know, we want to claim this billboard as our own, to do our own, you know, make it an art billboard. Since we're an art gallery here, this billboard should be for art, right? And I think it would serve the community, at least that little corner there, that, you know, there's a little bit of culture here on this corner, you know, besides the culture that we're trying to create in the mini park for the kids, you know, and educate them to, you know, Quetzalcoatl, you know, what's Quetzalcoatl? The kids will say, what's this big old feathered serpent? What's its meaning? Well, you know, now we're going to, you know, educate you to a little bit of Aztec history and Mexican history and this and that. And so after a while, the billboard company says, okay, we give up. You guys can keep the billboard, right? But we're taking our frame off of it. We're taking our frame off of it. In fact, they took the whole billboard away, right? So the wall looked even more terrible because there had been a fire there, and you see all the smoke up on the wall. So they said, well, hey, listen, you guys aren't being right with us by doing this. So they came back and put a billboard on there for us, but without a frame. Because in them days, they used to have these metal frames that it would look like a painting, right? But they just put up that, like I showed you that in that photograph, big wall, big wood wall like that, big wall like that. And so after that, it was our billboard, the Galleria's billboard. So I don't know how many times, you know, I had the energy to go out there and do all these other murals that I did on that billboard. Because I know I did that one Frida Kahlo one at one time. And then I did another one that was showing Christopher Columbus, you know, for Columbus Day. But I had done a few. And then after that, other artists would go out there and actually paint, spend a week or whatever, when a new show was coming up in the Galleria, see. And as time went by, though, they stopped doing that, and then the new people that were running the Galleria were just, because now we had computer art, computers, and people could print stuff up and go, like the billboard company, print them on paper and then just paste the stuff up there. So as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about anybody, but it kind of went downhill, that experience, right, of seeing really beautiful hand-painted murals on that one wall, on that billboard, which is okay. You know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Michael, you know, I'm really curious because I'm wondering, I know you talked a little bit about this, but I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about your motivation for wanting to paint that mural for kids in the mini park. Like, what was the reason why you saw that wall and you were like, all right, I want to paint here?
Well, because at that time, my first son that was killed in 1982 must have been about 6 years old, right? And so a lot of my work that I would do to entertain him, you know? And so it just happened to be that one day I was standing in the Galleria de la Raza, and from that corner, you could see the mini park, a little bit of the mini park. And it just, I don't know, just the idea came to me, I'd like to go out there and do something for these children, right? Because I've always thought that, you know, if kids, you can get kids at a young age to get inspired to want to do art or play music, you know, I think it's a great thing, you know, because we always need more children, you know, exploring their creativity and being able to, like, you know, feel that they have, you know, this magic in them to express it through art and in music. And if it's not music, it's science or all that kind of good stuff. Because then I think people will remember you more like that, for those kind of dedications of how you dedicated your life, right, to do things to inspire people, right, that we're all a particular universe unto ourselves, right, with a lifetime, an infinite past that we come from, and an infinite future that we're going into, even though we're at a crossroads right now here as a human being in this world right now on this earth.
Do you remember any children or any young people stopping by maybe the mini park or any other mural and saying something about your work, even when you were still creating it?
They probably did, you know, when I was actually out there doing it, you know, and, you know, the mothers and the kids, they'd say, oh, we love what you're doing. We love what you're doing. You know, your colors are beautiful and keep it up.
That's cool. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like it was like a response to something? Because I remember you mentioning like seeing like all this mierda that was like everywhere, right? Like,
well, here's another reason that I thought it was important for me to, because again, growing up originally doing commercial art and having to deal with art directors at agencies, I would notice in the Mission more than any other, you know, on the sort of like low income communities, that there were a lot of billboards stuck on people's walls. Billboards, either small little billboards or bigger billboards, advertising, you know, all these erroneous products, cigarettes and liquor, and just, you know, and I thought, God, it'd be nice if every once in a while you would see a billboard that was totally geared to some relevant educational message, right? Telling the kids, don't forget to brush your teeth before you leave home, or, you know, did you do your homework? Or things like that, right? Totally opposed to selling a product, you know? Because, you know, when you think about it, these spaces that these billboard companies choose to tag their billboards on, right, do have an impact on people that walk the streets. Commercial advertising is very devious in a lot of ways, in the way they use, you know, subliminal messages to sell products. See, and so I learned that. I knew, right, that there's that, you know. And so anyway, to me it was like, you know, a lot of eyesore to look at these billboards and not see anything artistic, cultural, or otherwise, right? When these billboards, if people had a little bit more of a higher consciousness and are a little bit more enlightened in their mind, could see more beautiful messages in these frames, right? As opposed to just selling products, right?
I think that's very clear, especially in the Bank of America mural,
mm-hmm.
because it takes a lot of cojones, it takes a lot of guts to paint a critique of capitalism when the bank is commissioning you to paint there.
Well, see, that's another thing. I can't believe, right, that my partner, the main artist, Chuy Campuzano.
Chuy.
Right. Well, you know, did this for whatever reasons, right? We were convinced to do this. But then I read a quote from Diego Rivera. He says, it doesn't matter where you do a mural, even if it's for a Bank of America or the Wall Street or for, you know, the... like in San Francisco, you know, Rivera did murals for, you know, the stock brokers.
Yeah, stock exchange.
Right, right. It's because it's not really for those higher up folks, right? It's for more the common man, the common folks. See, so, but the mural that we did for the Bank of America, there was some controversy. Why is this mural going to be in the bank? Why can't they take this mural that we're doing? A big 90-foot mural, you know, and we put a lot of content in it, You know, I went there. I mean, the original schedule was already done by Chewy, right? But they needed somebody to actually go teach them how to paint the thing, right? And since I had already been doing murals, and I knew how to illustrate, and I knew how to mix colors, I said, okay, man, this is how we're going to do it, you guys, right? We're going to go about it this way. And sort of make it look like a fresco, right? With all these little strokes that we did to work on all the stuff in the mural, and at that time, I think the Brown Berets in Oakland were still kind of like alive and well, you know, doing things. And we thought, man, why don't we just kidnap this mural and take it someplace to Oakland where it can be seen by everybody, not just people that are going to come to the bank. But we kind of like, you know, gave up on that idea because we said, no, it's going to even create more problems for us. Let's just go along, get it done, finish it, you know, and see what happens, you know. And
was there any kind of censorship from the bank to your work, Chewy's?
Well, there was a scene that we did where these doctors were in an operating room giving birth. A woman was giving birth, right? And then, so in that scene, there was like these little circles that we did, all these little diseases, like cancer, you know. And one of the cancers was the SLA symbol. One of the symbols that we did, we drew the SLA symbol, right, this like seven-headed snake, right? And they said, hey, look, the bank says, you know, you guys can't have that up on there, right? We won't finish paying you guys until you guys, you know, figure something else to do there. We don't want any kind of controversy, right? Political or otherwise, you know, kind of street revolutionary stuff in their content here. So we compromised and put something else on there, you know, some other kind of disease, you know. And so, I mean, it's like that, you know, just throughout time. I mean, De Rivera, same thing when he was doing Rockefeller murals, you know. They actually destroyed his mural, and he went back to Mexico and repainted it again, right? So, but it's a mural that's been there for a lot of years, and it's in pristine condition because it's inside the bank, you know, and so it has its value and it has its purpose, mm-hmm. right? I mean, besides that, I've done other murals, like say, for instance, I did a mural over on 24th and Mission Street.
Let's get into that one in the next question. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a couple of follow-ups, because you just mentioned that you did the mural. It's inside of the building, and this is a very different kind of mural because most of these other murals are on the outside. What are some of the challenges of painting a mural inside rather than outside?
Well, I mean, there's a difference between being out in the air in the elements and being indoors, like in this studio, you know, you're out of the rain, you know, and on the wind, out of the wind. And so it's a little bit more pleasant if you're in a studio doing art. But at the same time, because we're out, if you're doing a mural out on the street, there's a lot of good things that happen because, you know, there are just folks that go up and down the street and you're doing this to entertain them in a way, right? Or they get to see something actually from nothing, something is coming about, you know, this big, beautiful painting. And I mean, both places where you're going to do art, whether it's indoors or outdoors, is challenging. It's challenging, you know. And I mean, what you want to do in either environment is just keep your focus and know that you want to create something beautiful that people are going to like appreciate and talk about, whether it's this way or that way, right? Because like I said, besides it being a mission that you want to like, you know, want it to be your mission in life to do art and be an artist, right? And explore your inner world and bring it to the surface, you know, and make things, and you have the ability to create, make the invisible visible, which artists do, right? Because before you start, it's like this screen here. It's just a blank wall. But you have the vision, you have a vision, a third eye, to see something appear, right? And that's how artists work. You know, they have either a dream, or they come into a vision, you know, or the vision formulates as they're going about it, you know, and so it's I mean, to me, it's a special thing to do, and I'm grateful that I have the ability to sometimes do it and make sense of it. You know, a lot of times it might not make any sense, but you still do it. You know, because some people love what you're doing, and some people, man, don't get it, and some people don't like it. You know, so everybody's got their own opinion on how they see things.
What do you remember, like, of the public perception of this specific mural? Because as you're saying, everyone has their own opinion about it, and they see different things depending on who they are. But there were events, like, for example, there was this Roberto Vargas poetry reading, and these other things attached to the mural. Like, how did this change the perception of the work or of the mural itself?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, because I have friends that are, like you say, Roberto Vargas is a great friend of mine. And Alejandro Murguia, same thing, you know. And these guys, so they don't do murals, but they, you know, they're great poets and writers, you know, and are sort of like, you know, contemporaries of mine, and, you know, and have their own perspective, you know, on life and culture, you know, growing up Latinos and Hispanics, whatever, and I think if you're a poet, because I'm inspired by great poetry, and I'm inspired by great music, you know, so in whatever art form you're doing your work, you know, they should be able to inspire each other, you know. I mean, because to me, poetry, I mean, beautiful poetry by some of the great poets in the world, I mean, it's like being in the company of a great painter, a great, you know, musician, right? It's just that they're using words to express, you know, a certain thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just as beautiful as sitting in a concert hall and listening to a great symphony, you know, so.
What were some of the comments that people made about that mural, the Bank of America mural?
To be honest, I mean, I can't really recall what some of the comments were. I think for the most part, folks appreciated it, you know, we're happy, right, that another mural came into being in the community, even though it was inside the bank. Not everybody goes to the Bank of America, and if you need, but there was enough interest, I think, as time went by, because I wasn't the only one doing murals after a while. You know, it was the Mujeres Muralistas, right, that came a little bit after me, because I had started doing these murals in this children's mini park on 24th Street. And originally I wanted to do the entire park, all the walls that were in there from these buildings. But then the women came to me and said, hey, well, we think you're kind of hogging all the walls. You know, we would like a wall. I said, yeah, be my guest. You guys do beautiful work. It'd be great to have us all here at the same time doing murals for the kids, see. So, I mean, there are a few murals that I've done in the Mission, not a whole lot. I mean, I could never catch up with Susan Cervantes and her team, right? And she's just kind of like the godmother of the mural movement here in the city, you know, and beyond. And Juan Alicia, too. You know, these are all, you know, to me, great artists, these women.
Yeah.
Kind of like a...
And as you're mentioning, for example, earlier you mentioned Las Mujeres Muralistas. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself an ally of these kinds of environmental feminist causes that are associated with the muralismo movement from the mission?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I totally honor these women to do what they did and have the energy and the mind and the creativity to go out there and do and express their own views and their own symbolism and imagery, you know, to enhance, you know, the community with their work, their art. So no, I hold these women artists in high esteem, you know, and because there was a time, again, you know, where we worked together, you know, just in this, like in the mini park in particular, when I was on one wall doing my work and they were on another wall doing their work, you know, and we'd spend the whole day painting, you know, and it was a luxury to do that. And at the end of the day, we'd all meet at the Galleria de la Raza. I said, oh, everybody did good work today. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it was a fun time. It was a fun experience, you know. And now they've kept it alive. That's their life work, of course. And so they've done a lot of beautiful things. And Susan Cervantes, up and above us all, with her Presida Eyes mural workshop, you know, has got a lot of murals under her, you know.
And then, just because you mentioned Mini Park, and you have mentioned it before, mm-hmm. also, as you're saying, you and Susan and other people were turning this place into a park full of murals. And mm-hmm. how do you think that your first mural in the Mini Park is now that you have the hindsight of many years? And
well, I'm amazed that, you know, even though they totally need restoration, I mean, they're almost like completely gone, although I'm surprised that they haven't gotten there and whitewashed them and did something new, right? They're still giving me the benefit of the doubt that there's going to be funds at some point in time in the future to go out there and renovate these murals, right, in their original form somewhat, and hire me as the original artist to go there and kind of like see that come about. But if not, I'm saying, you know, there's always, we could always completely whitewash what was there and put up a whole brand new set of images, you know, and then bring it into some other, you know, new contemporary thing, you know. Those murals were, they go back quite a few years now, you know. When I think of the mural that I did for the Mission Neighborhood Health Center, that was in like 1976, you know, and maybe 50 years ago now. So.
And you did that one with Graciela Carrillo, right?
She did one, yeah, she did one wall, and I did the other wall. And then it was like about maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago that we got funding from Todco Corporation to go out there, from John Elberling, you know, he's a complete champion in my eyes, to go out there and restore these murals. You know, we met, and he says, hey, I've got some money that I can put towards this restoration project. But it was Susan Cervantes and her son that went out there and retouched Graciela's mural. I was able to go out there and do my own, you know, that I had originally done. So that was I was happy for us to be able to do that.
See? How is it, for example, that you remember the collaboration in these kinds of projects? As you're saying, Graciela had her wall, you mm-hmm. had your wall. How do you remember working collaboratively in these projects with other artists?
Well, I'm sure when we're out there together in near proximity, we inspire each other, right? I mean, because I couldn't do what they were doing or she was doing. You know, I was totally doing what I do. But at the same time, you know, it was just, you know, inspiring to see each other working and doing this, right? That we're actually there. you know, sitting on the scaffold, you know, and then painting away, you know, and then at the end of the day, he says, oh, wow, what a great addition of color that you came up with today, you know, oh, my God. And so we would encourage each other. We would encourage each other, right, that we're doing a beautiful work, you know, and a lot of people are going to be happy for it. And the beautiful thing is that if and whatever our mission in life is, if we can go about inspiring people to kind of like raise their consciousness, again, to be a more beautiful people, right, and have a little bit more of a beautiful perspective and vision of life, then you know we're doing good. We're doing good in that way. See, and artists, I think that's why I love. You know, being in company with all these beautiful folks that are my friends, that are artists or musicians, right? Because, you know, their mind's in the right place. Their aspirations are in the right place. You know, what they want to share with people, man, are the more beautiful aspects of our life and our culture. So that's how that went. And then when I seen this wall over on 24th and Mission, this long, long rectangular wall, and at that time, the BART system was just coming into the community, right? They had built this BART station there, and so I thought, well, I'm going to do a mural that's showing the BART on the tracks, but then I'm going to make these cement beams that hold the BART up, make them look like, you know, the most geometrical figures, right? These cement pillars, right, that hold the tracks up and make them look like people. A man, a woman, a man, a woman. And then in between them, the masses of people that are going to ride this train system, right? So, and to me, that wasn't very, it wasn't a controversial or political statement. Although, when I think, okay, if you're going to show, you know, people shouldering tracks, you know, right? Then there's a weight on your shoulders, right? 24th Street and Mission Street is sort of like, you know, a hard intersection of the community. You know, just because, you know, the BART station is there and people either go into the BART from the corner, from either corner, juxtaposed corners, to go downtown or go to Daly City, right? And so it's a busy, busy intersection, see? And so at the time that my mural, when I first had done that mural, you know, the colors were beautiful, bright, you know? And again, that particular mural there, I was inspired by Orozco. My original intention was to see the entire wall that I had done mosaic. But the San Francisco SIP, the art commission, they told me, well, we don't have that kind of money for you to do a mosaic, but we, you know, we'll help you with some funding to do a painting, you know, on the stucco wall, and we'll help you with the scaffolding. And then at the same time, had gotten a grant from the National Endowment of the Arts to help fund this mural project, where I was able to hire two other assistant artists, friends of mine, to help me do it. You know,
who were these artists, Machado and Montez?
Right, Tony Machado and Richard Montez were my Oakland buddies, my Oakland friends, uh-huh. Right? That we kind of both came from Oakland to San Francisco to do what we did. So they were my team. They were my team because they were the ones that helped me actually do that first that first cartoon mural.
And how? What was like their role, and what was your role creating that mural on
the
BART
station? I was the originator, right? I mean, they just kind of followed my lead because I could trust that they can copy what I was painting, or if I said, hey, man, can you guys paint it this way? Machado was good at that, copying my colors, you know. And they were actually the ones that helped me do the murals in the mission, in the mini park, the San Francisco mini park, you know, over there on 24th Street. So, because I couldn't have done these murals by myself. Luckily, I had a team. These guys were my team. Plus, we all played music together. We played guitar together, you know, and we lived together. So that's how we would go out there as a little team, you know, a little trio, you know. And but after a while, you know, they went about their own way, their own business, you know. And so it's the humble people, and simple people, right, that, you know, carry the weight of this train system, right? It's people's taxpayers' money that are going to pay for this system, you know. And but in a more, you know, for me, a more insightful metaphor was that, you know, it's poor people, right, that are always, you know, have to carry the burden of, you know, of things in society.
Right, like the it's built on the backs of immigrants and your mural on 24th Street at the BART
station.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good way of putting it because, you know, most folks, like, say, in the early centuries, the train systems were built by the Chinese, you know, right? And, or the Mexicans, you know. It's always, you know, the ethnic people, right, that are doing the hard labor and the hard work out there.
Yeah, as you're saying, like, there's, like, these was paid by the taxpayers and the people that populated the mission back then, which in the 70s was predominantly, like, it became predominantly Hispanic. It jumped from 20% in the last decade on the 60s to 40% the next decade. And
but I agree with that, and I think also you were really responding to, you know, if we're looking at the BART mural that you made,
yeah,
you were also really responding to an issue of the day, right?
Well, yeah, I couldn't help it. Yeah.
What were you responding to?
Well, initially, you know, well, here comes this brand new, you know, rail system that's going to come, and service the neighborhood, right? People could jump on the BART and get quicker to town or get quicker to Oakland, right? But at the same time, there's a price that, again, that people are paying for this thing, you know. I mean, developers and people out there are bringing new things into a city, you know, there's a lot of motives behind it, right? And a lot of times, like gentrification, for instance. So for instance, like this corporation that I'm part of right now, this Totco Corporation, and I'm their artist in residence. So when the South of Market was being gentrified, and the Moscone Center, and all those places around there, at that one time, before all that started, there were hotels that housed all the old folks. A lot of Filipino community was the South of Market, right? And but because they were going to build these new buildings and all this, all those old hotels were going to come down. And these folks were all going to be displaced. See, the same thing with what's going on now with people not being able to, like, afford to live in San Francisco anymore because the rents have just gotten so out of hand, you know, that people that have been here forever now can't afford to be here because, again, it comes down to the people being greedy for money, right? And it's not so much... a human issue anymore. It's more a financial, you know, issue, right?
But what were you hoping, like, you know, the people who are walking by this mural entering BART would think about, you know, when they saw your mural? Like, what were you hoping that people would see? And, you know, you just talked about how you want to inspire something higher, something more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What were you hoping people would walk by and feel and see when they saw that?
Well, I mean, really, to be honest, I mean, I wasn't really hoping for people to think one way or the other about it, because you never know what people are thinking unless, you know, you sit down and have a conversation with somebody and ask them, hey, well, what are you thinking, you know? I mean, maybe a few times people say, hey, we love what you've done here because it's kind of like touched upon a certain kind of, like, you know, issue that, you know, we all think about but don't really know how to express it. And you've expressed a kind of, like, a thing here with your graphics, right, that, yeah.
Or even like social justice, what you're saying, for example, or the question earlier, which was Mini Park, the BART station mural, these other ones, they always are expressing these ideas about, you know, they're going to gentrify the Mission. They're going to be building this upon the backs of immigrants. And nowadays, in that same place where the mural is, and as you said, the interpretation was about BART is built on the backs of immigrants. Now, that's where a lot of the testing for COVID-19, which we're in the middle of the pandemic, is being done. Do you think that in your art, that you're reflecting this spirit of the times, as you're saying, that you're having a kind of conversation with people about these social justice issues or just these things that were affecting people?
Well, when I was out there, when artists are out there in the public, and so somebody's there watching what you do, and then you, so you jump off the scaffold, and they want to ask you, say, well, why are you doing this? What are you doing this for? And we love what you're doing, but what's your motivation? And then that's when you get into a conversation with them, and you kind of like, you know, if it makes sense to them, oh, great. Then they understand why you're doing this. And I'm sure I've had a lot of conversations, or did have a conversation with a lot of folks that would take time to jump off the scaffold and try to explain to them that I'm doing something here to, like, first of all, to beautify the neighborhood, to bring color, you know, into the neighborhood, that people have something really pleasant and beautiful to look at, but at the same time, there was some content of a message in it, right?
What was the message?
Well, again, they can consider it, depending on how you see things, political. It could be a political message, right? That, you know, humble people and poor people throughout time and history have shouldered the weight of building things in society. See, it's like if you go back to the pyramids, when, you know, all the slaves, you know, were, you know, lifting all these boulders and rocks to build these pyramids. You know, it's no different nowadays when you have, you see all these big buildings going up, all these construction workers. When you go out, like, say, in my particular neighborhood, most of the construction workers that I see out here doing all the sidewalks and doing all the heavy labor and all the welding and picking up these beams are ethnic people, Latin people, you know? And that has not changed, you know? They're the ones that do all the heavy lifting and all the heavy, you know, work, you know? And it's usually, you know, the more privileged, you know, excuse my expression, you know, white people that are running the show. And they're not the ones that are out there, you know, moving rocks, you know, and breaking up the rocks, you know, and building sidewalks, you know. And the more poor folks, right? I mean, they have a job. It's a beautiful thing that they have work, right? But they're the ones that do the heavy work. See?
Michael, I have a question for you about it, which is, you know, I think in sort of our research about the Mission murals, we found that many of the muralists are responding to social and political movements of the day. I'm wondering how, it seems like your work is also in many ways doing that. I wonder if you can just kind of talk a little bit about how, you know, I think you expanded on how people walk by, you know, murals, and it serves the people, and you have the people first flag. I wonder if you can just talk about the importance of that level of public, like, education or public pedagogy or response to social movements in your work.
Well, if you're going to, like, again, you know, like, I mean, a lot of artists, right, will take on, you know, the issue of the day and try to make light of it in some kind of, like, a artistic juxtaposition of things and objects in your painting, right? Some dark and some light and some, you know, humorous and some, you know, tragic, all these things. And it's just another reminder for the folks out there in the public, because your art, mural art, is a public sort of like experience, right? You're doing it for the public to get your point across, see? And if, again, artists, just like everybody else, have feelings. We all have feelings, and we are all affected by, you know, the news of the day, right? And so a lot of times you say, man, you know, I need to do something about this because it's really bugging me. So they'll do something really, you know, extreme, right, and controversial. But it's just like anything else that people are fed every day. You want them, at the end of the day, to sort of like think about where our society is going, you know, and where we are as a group of people, that we're either stifling our consciousness in our education, you know, or we're growing and inspiring each other to go a little bit higher and think a little bit more with compassion, you know, and loving our neighbors and being a little bit more forthright and treating people equally, you know, get up and above racial stereotyping, get up and above, you know, seeing people as a color as opposed to like just seeing into their spirit and their soul, you know, because you know, artists work with colors, an array, a palette of colors, you know, all different colors. And so it's always disturbing to me when all we can refer to each other as a white person or a black person or a yellow person, and it's not very high-minded. It's not very high-minded in the way you think, if you're thinking that way, and you look at each other from just the color of your skin, you know. So I would like to think that because I aspire also to be a spiritual person, and whatever that means, you know, whether it's a cliche, that you know, you're looking, when you're in company with your human brothers and sisters out there in the human race, right, that you're looking at them the more beautiful aspects of their life, right? Their childlike spirit, right, that you connect to when you see. So, you know, when I meet an old person, an 80-year-old person, or a 90-year-old person, the first thing I'd like to like imagine is that this person was like a little child, right? And the child is still in them, although their body is now a 90-year-old body, you know, and a 90-year-old mind. But behind that mind, right, there's layers, you know, you go back, that there's a spirit of a child there. This person loves connecting with this childlike spirit and is, you know, what he did when he was a child, you know, and what inspired him, you know. I mean, it's and so if I can look at people that way, right, and look, you know, have some kind of third eye to look into their heart and see that this person, you know, is really a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful person, right? And he's not all that he pretends to be, you know, with all the masks that people wear, you know, to go through life, you know, because and that's what artists do. They're good at you know, having an inner vision, right, to seeing things, you know. It's like if you're a portrait artist and you're sitting there doing a portrait, you know, I mean, you don't want to just capture the superficial aspects of a person's image, right? You want to kind of like be able to like, and even though it's going to might be a little bit abstract, like Picasso might do, you're capturing the spirit of this person, right? And so that's where we're all on an equal level playing field, that we're all spirits, we're all spiritual human beings, although we're all in different bodies of different colors, you know, and come from different parts of the world, right? But there's a common, like, you know, spiritual energy that permeates all our lives, right?
Let me ask you one question about your mural making work, because you've spoken before about Diego Rivera, and there's the Orozco as well as Siqueiros, but you yourself with, let's say, Tri Campuzano and Luis Cortázar, like, you were also a trio. And these previous ones that I was mentioning, Siqueiros, Rivera, Orozco, are known as Los Tres Grandes. Do you see, how do you see yourself with those Tres Grandes and now you guys also being three greats that continue the legacy?
Well, I mean, I guess there's some kind of connection there, you know, because it's always great when you have compadres and fellow artists that are kind of like, you're aspiring to do the same thing, right? In your own way, you know, your own particular creative way, original way, but you're also there to encourage each other. And once in a while you might collaborate and work on a particular project all at one, you know, all at the same time. And so I've learned how to collaborate with folks. I've learned how to do projects in collaboration with folks, and not be totally think that I'm so full of myself that I can just do it. It's just me and just me. It's not that. You know, you need a team, one way or the other, man, to be great. There's always some, you know, background of support that you have that pushes you along, and although you might be the particular in the picture, but there's always some other folks there, right, that are there, part of your team to do it. Even though they might not get the notoriety that you get, they deserve it too. So, but again, you know, I'm happy that I was part of this movement, and that there are other younger artists, right, that are still keeping things alive. And I mean, there's all kinds of places to do murals, but the Mission happens to be just saturated with them, which is kind of a cool thing in a way, because I guess, you know, they accept, right, that this is a neighborhood where people do art and want to do art. Even though we already have one across the street, you know, and here's another one across this street, the same street, you know. And so you got five or six murals on one street or one block. You know.
Why do you think it happened in the Mission? Why specifically the Mission in San Francisco?
Well, just because people have probably realized that it's the most soulful neighborhood in San Francisco. See, it's not the Mission. We have the Carnival, right? We have the Carnival. No other neighborhood in San Francisco has a Carnival like we do. See, and that's when the colors really come out in the Carnival, see. And so it's a vibrant neighborhood. You know, the sun shines more here in the Mission than it does in other neighborhoods. You know, it's a little bit warmer. I mean, it's like sort of like, it's the bottom of the skillet. So, you know, and then you have all the hills around. But, you know, the Mission is like that, right, where you get the most sun, the most pleasant weather, you know. And again, people in the general community have sort of like gotten used to seeing art go up every here and there sometimes, you know. And so younger artists, I guess they feel a little bit more secure, right, that they can come to the Mission and get permission from some wall owner, some building owner, to put a mural up on their wall, right, because they'll be in company with other murals. It's not like they're going to Knob Hill, you know, and places like that to do them, you know. But I would just think that, again, wherever it is, artists always need, you know, support and corporate sponsorship to keep the arts alive, right? If San Francisco, see, San Francisco, I guess in particular, is like a mission, is like a mural capital of the world, one of the mural capitals of the world, although there could be others around in Europe and wherever, but we're well known for that. A lot of people just come just to come to the mission, you know, not only to be in a funky Latino neighborhood, right, with everybody speaking Spanish here and there, and you know, but to see all this beautiful art that all these folks are doing, kids and otherwise, you know. And so it's kind of like a special place in San Francisco. You know, it's unfortunate, right, that all this gentrification and all this other stuff has people have had to leave, right, myself included. You know, my only footprint in San Francisco now is here in this studio, right, although I have my murals out there, you know, for in whatever condition they are, they're out there still, and they haven't really disappeared just yet. Like, so that's how it goes, you know. I mean, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, and when you realized you called it your mission on the mission,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me, two aspects. It can have more, which is to, yes, beautify the place, make sure that the mission is beautiful to look at with all these incredible art that you're making, as well as then transmit a message that also engages people spiritually and also tells them that there are some things that are, as you said, tragic and comic at the same time. And I think that is, in a sense, what you were doing all along with your art when you became an artist. Do you agree with that statement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do, because, you know, just like food, I mean, it's not all the time that you're going to get something sweet. Sometimes you're going to get the sour also, you know. And so, and that's what balances things out. You don't want too much salt on your plate, just enough, right? Or enough, you don't want too much sugar, you know, just enough, right, to sweeten things up a little bit. And and life like that, in all its, you know, intricacies, you know, are that same way. You know, you learn how to be on some kind of a middle road to balance things out, where you're not too extreme on one side or the other. You know, you're not too high above anybody or below anybody. You know, you think that, you know, you're sort of like in the middle and equal with everybody, you know, and you give everybody the same benefit, you know, and that kind of thing.
How would you describe your work? Like, you know, if you had to describe it, how would you describe your work? Like, sort of like the iconography that you pick, or, mm-hmm. you know, where does that inspiration come from?
Well, I guess you can see a little bit of Picasso influences in some of this stuff, you know. But it goes beyond that. I mean, I'm not always just trying to copy Picasso, you know. When so here's a piece of, I mean, I titled Lunch with Picasso. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I see there's some religious iconography, some, you know, Mayan, Aztec iconography. You know, where does that kind of inspiration come from for you?
Well, because it's all those things that you mentioned are all around us, right? And I like to think, again, right, with my aspirations for being more prolific in my expressions of my work, that I can encompass all those things into my art, right? And I don't segregate, you know, too much of that stuff. I mean, I like to include it all because, you know, it's all part of our life, and there's nothing new under the sun for me, right? And so I think that all those things, even though they may be If you think of a frame, they could all be in a juxtaposition, right? One thing could be in this corner, the other thing could be in this corner, but they're all part of life. They're all part of life, and they're all part of our history, you know, and our particular cultures, you know. I mean, I embrace Buddhism, you know. I embrace, you know, my Mexicanness, you know, and I embrace my San Francisco-ness and my Oakland-ness, you know, and so all those things, you know, you like to think that it just kind of like enhances your own makeup when you think you can connect to a lot of things and you don't limit yourself, and your vision is a little bit more stereoscopic, you know, 360 degrees kind of thing. So I would like to think that there's a lot of things that that inspire me, and I let inspire me. Say, like, can I get up for a minute and just show you something? Come back.
Can we do it? Or you're gonna grab something and bring it back? Oh yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
Let me just grab something. Here.
Absolutely.
Sure. Here is a painting. Let me show you. See this painting here. Now, this little shack here used to be across the way here, next door to this building. This is where I used to do my work, in this room here, in this, right? So, last year, or the year before, when Trump was talking about building a wall, right, to keep all the Mexicans out, right? And it was constantly on the news, right? Hammering away at this, you know, this wall. You know, it was really upsetting me because, you know, he was first attacking my people, attacking the Latino people and calling us this and that, right? Good for nothings. So I said, okay, I'm going to paint this wall here that represents Trump's idea of a wall, right? But it's a wall that is not going to be a successful wall because it's going to be there's going to be a rift in this wall. And the rift is when they were doing that Dakota pipeline, right there, see? And at the same time, because the country was so divided in their alliance and allegiance with, you're either in a blue state or a red state, or you're either a Republican or a Democrat, and all this, to me, you know, erroneous allegiance, right, to political parties, which I'm not. My allegiance is to the culture and the world of art, you know, in company with all artists. So I decided to paint this wall here to represent what Trump's wall was. It's sort of like a yellow brick road kind of thing. And but it wasn't well built, you know, so there's a rift there, right? And it's broken. So, and these little support things here are like the letters T for Trump's wall, you know. But because San Francisco is a sanctuary city, right? I felt that this little neighborhood here, this little area here, right, where my studio was, and where I had my art in these shipping containers, you know, to keep my art there, you know, and then one of my friends went to Standing Rock in the middle of winter, and they let him stay in one of these teepees there, see? And he took this flag there with him, the San Francisco flag, right? So, I mean, I love San Francisco because, you know, right, I mean, we're not aligned with the Republicans, you know. I mean, although I'm not either one or the other. So I figured, okay, but Mexicans, a wall is not going to keep Mexicans out of any place, right? Because if it has to be, they know how to build tunnels, see? So this is like an indication of a tunnel that they would build, you know, and say, we hired Chapo, El Chapo, to build this tunnel, and here they come out in the middle of, you know, middle America, right? They finally come here and their flashlight, right? And so so you got the flag of San Francisco, right? It represents, you know, the sanctuary. And so I'm saying, you know, my yard here with my studio is my sanctuary, but it's in San Francisco. But even up above, you know, the flag of San Francisco, there's a flag that says people first, see? And then even up above there, you've got this little bird on the flagpole, see? So it's Mother Nature up above everything else, see? So to me, this was somewhat of a little bit of a political statement that thought I had to get out of my head and put on there, right? And so I had fun doing this painting, you know. And like when you think about Goya, the artist Goya, right, and how he saw things in his world, right, and what he would draw, you know, to come to some atonement with what life was about back then in Spain and you know, these revolutions and this and that. Artists throughout time have always been spokesmen for social issues and causes, but in their own artistic kind of way, right? And it's a little bit more, for me, a softer blow on how to, like, enlighten people. Because the whole notion of us doing art is to enlighten each other, right? Even though there's a lot of, you know, messages in society and issues in society, right, that come along with all the education that we have to, like, you know, come to terms with. But at the end, you like to think, okay, through all this weeding out of good information and bad information, whether it comes through you, through books, and, you know, a lot of it will come through you, to you, in the form of art and culture, see? I mean, Carlos, like when Santana goes out there and plays a show, just like any great musicians, you know, he would like to think that at the end of the night that folks were really inspired and it was a magical spiritual experience, right? That he took them a little bit higher, because in between some of the sets that he does, he'll get on the microphone and express, you know, certain kind of views that he has about life and how we should kind of, like, look at it and think that, you know, we're more than what we really, really think we are. You know, just greater human beings, right, than we give ourselves credit for. See, and artists are good at making pictures of those kind of notions.
Let me get into your friendship and work with, I think, one of your longest standing collaborators and friends, which is Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that you met in 86, finally, but it happened after a mural and a gig painting for a drum set. Is that true?
So in 1986, with this other artist friend of mine, both of us together had done this mural on 22nd and South Van Ness, and this was probably the last mural that I had ever done in the Mission. Right, but so, and it was a big project because it was three big walls that we did. The middle wall was going to be a wall that was going to feature Carlos Santana, mariachis behind him because his father came from a family of mariachis. And then at the same time, to honor another great person in Latin music, Eddie Palmieri, and another great Cuban conga player, Armando Barraza. We put him in there also. So, but our reason for wanting to honor Carlos is because he was a product of the mission, so to speak, right? He grew up in the mission and started his career there. He's formed the Santana Band there out of the mission and was able to capture world attention with his music, right? With the help of Bill Graham and going to Woodstock, right? And so I felt if I wanted to honor anybody, it was going to be somebody that was going to be contemporary, that people could relate to, a person that was doing something beautiful with his work, you know, his music and his art, and it was Carlos, see? So, and I wasn't doing it to impress him. I was doing it more for the benefit of the community again, right? For them to realize that, hey, you got somebody that's really beautiful, that does beautiful music, and is a hit out there in the world with his music, has come up with something really unique in the collaboration of his Latin blues, Latin and blues music, you know, and congas and all those, you know, the mixture that he's, his own particular mixture of music. So, so he, you know, he was grateful that we did that. He was happy, right? And he was honored, right, that I had done that for him, you know. And so it wasn't too long after that, after we had done the mural, and it was so the day of the opening, the day of the dedication of the mural, so I had gotten Supervisor Jim Gonzalez, who was the supervisor of the Mission District at the time, and then his father, Jose Santana, used to come by every day to watch us paint the mural. So, you know, I would jump off the scaffold and run over there and say, hey, Jose, how are you doing, Jose? He says, oh, yeah, I like what you're doing. I love what you're doing, you know. But that doesn't quite look like my son. And so he says, but I have some photographs that I'm going to bring you tomorrow to show you what I think my son looks like. So this is a funny story. So then that same night I got a call from his management company saying, hey, you know, Carlos is he's kind of snuck out there on the sly and seeing what you're doing, you know, and he loves what you're doing, but he just wants to know one thing: why you're making him look like a cartoon. He says, but that's okay. He says, come into the office tomorrow, and we got a lot of photographs that we want you to look at to take with you, right, to give you a better kind of like a view of him, you know, right, and this and that, and his poses. So that's what I did. You know, I went and got a lot of photographs from them. And at the same time, his father the next day also brought me a folder, one of the Manila folder, with all his old photographs of Carlos, you know. And I said, okay, now I know what to do, you know, because I was sort of like, I was working off of just one little photograph, you know. So, but all these other photographs had shown me all these different perspectives of him, you know, and a little bit more of a 360-degree view of him, you know, playing guitar and looking up the way he does. So so then I was able to get it right. So then his father came back and says, yeah, it looks exactly like my son now. He says, you know, are you going to have a dedication? I said, yeah, Jose, we are. He said, well, you know, I'd like to come out there and honor my son by bringing my mariachi band out there to play. And but we're going to double it up. We're going to have like 24 mariachis. Right, plus a singer. I said, oh, that'll be great, man. I'm sure Carlos is going to love it, right? So I called Carlos. I said, hey, man, make sure, man, you're going to come out there that day of the dedication, because at the same time, I'm going to have a bunch of posters made of the mural that we did to give out to the community, and you and I can sign, right? So this was the first time him and I got together to sign a poster, you know, to give to the people. And so it was a great dedication, you know. I mean, he honored us, he honored me, and he honored Cookie Gonzalez, my, you know, the other artist, you know, my, and other helper. It wasn't long after that his original drummer, Michael Shreves, who played Woodstock, says, "Hey man, Carlos is really in love with your colors, man, you know. So anyway, we're gonna get together for our 20th anniversary at the Shoreline, and I have this drum set I would like you to paint for me. Can you do the whole drum set?" I said, "Sure, man." So I did the drum set. After all that, he says, "Hey man, I think Carlos is gonna call you, man, to paint a guitar. Are you into it?" I said, "Yeah, sure, sure." So one of his guys says, "Hey man, Carlos would like you to come to the studio tomorrow if you can in San Rafael and talk about painting a guitar for him." I said, "Okay." So I go over there, and he says, "Man, I love what you did with Mike's drums. You know, can you paint me a guitar?" I said, "Sure, man." He says, "What do you want for payment?" I said, "Well, I don't want any money." I said, "But I'd be happy, man, to own one of those guitars you're playing over there right now." And he says, "Well, what kind do you like?" I said, "Well, I like that Paul Reed Smith, man." He says, "Oh, okay, cool." So he says, "Well, come on by tomorrow, right, and I'll have a guitar for you." Okay, so good. So again, so I went by the next day, they're in the middle of playing, and then they stop playing. He goes behind his amplifier and pulls out the guitar case and opens up and looks up at me and says, "Hey, what do you think?" I said, "Oh, that's a beautiful guitar, Carlos. Thank you, man. Thank you so much." I said, "Okay, well, I'll get busy." So I was doing sketches, but they were more like the designs that I had done for the drummer. He said, "No, no." He says, "I don't want that kind of stuff." He says, "I like your Mexican stuff more. Your Mexican imagery." I said, "Okay, I got it." So anyway, I'd done that, and it was a hit. So then his brother called me and says, "Hey man, Carlos wants to see some more your new work." I said, "Well, I'm doing shirts right now, just like his other guy that's doing shirts for him, Michael Roman." So I said, "Hey, here, take him this batch of shirts and see what he thinks." So it was like about maybe 20 shirts that I'd done, these t-shirts. So the next day his brother called me and says, "Hey man, come by the office, man, and got some money for you." So it was a check for $5,000, So I'm thinking, hey, well, this is way more than what the shirts are worth, He says, "Well, no, he wants to pay you handsomely for the shirts, but at the same time it's money for some future projects, but he wants you to come by. He wants you to come by his house tonight or tomorrow night or whatever, so you guys can talk about some future projects." So my contract with this California Arts Council was ending because I think I had gotten like 3 years in a row, and you can only get funding for that, and then you have to take a break. Uh-huh. But so I said, "Well, what am I going to do for this next year now?" See, so anyway, I started doing shirts, like these kind of shirts here, And then Carlos says, "Hey, man, I want to see some of your new work." I said, "Well, I'm doing shirts, just like your buddy." So I sent him a batch of shirts, and he was knocked out. He says, "Hey, man, can we do some more? Can we get together and do some more of this?" And just one thing led to another, right? So that's kind of how we got started working with each other, because he had all these pictures of all his heroes, which were my heroes, of course, of Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Bob Marley, John Lee Hooker. He says, "Can you do a shirt of this? Can we do a shirt of this guy and this and Jimi Hendrix?" I said, "Sure, man." I said, "As long as you pay for all the screen processing and all that, we can do it, And he says, yeah, you just go ahead and send an invoice to the office, right, and we'll get it all paid for." So we started doing that. And then he got me a contract with Sony Music, right? And that's when I had to become incorporated and start a business called Heaven Smiles Art Productions, because they wouldn't give me all this money unless I was incorporated, right? So I had to do that. And most of the work I was doing for Sony was geared for Carlos, right? I mean, I was doing stuff that was going to be geared for Michael Jackson or Tina Turner, whoever was on the roster, but it was mostly stuff that for Santana, right? So he took up the slack and employed me. I mean, I was employed with Carlos for almost 14 years straight just doing art, right? I didn't have to do anything else, right? So it was a great collaboration all these years that I had done been working with him, you know, because he just, you know, he's so creative himself, right? I mean, he doesn't really do graphic art, right? But he knows what he wants to see, you know.
Like he has the ideas too, but.
But he has ideas. He has ideas, you know, and because him and I are both the same age, I mean, we could communicate with each other very easily, mm-hmm. you know, and be on the same page, because. Same thing with Carlos. I mean, Carlos's inspirations are John Coltrane. His high inspirations, you know, Miles Davis. You know, all the jazz giants, you know, right? And the same with me, you know, I totally, you know, I'm inspired by these musicians also myself, because I'm, you know, I'm an aspiring musician.
Mm-hmm.
Although I knew that I wasn't going to make my complete living being a musician, you know, it would be something I would do on the side. But I was able to do art, you know, sort of like make a living at it all these years, you know.
Let me just ask you very specifically about something you just said, which is about your music,
mm-hmm.
just as a musician. Because right. one thing that we researched and found out was that it seems like you had a band called Grasa.
Well, that was way back when. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Way back.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, in fact, with that band, that was a band where we first started doing, it was John Calloway, myself,
okay.
and maybe Pete Gallegos, and who else? I forgot who else. Mike Madrigal. But that was our first, my first little Latino band.
Yeah.
That wasn't playing Malos or Santana type stuff, right? We were playing more, salsa kind of stuff. So that was our little claim to fame with our 45, right? That song that we made, San Francisco, became like the little anthem for the Mission District for a while. I guess it still is in a way. Yeah.
Salsa en el barrio.
Alma del barrio. So that was the hit song, San Francisco, right? It made us number one on the radio. Right? For 8 weeks we were number one on the radio in that year, 1982. So there was a flip side. I'm gonna play that also for you. So here was the flip side. This is a really great tune too. He called me one time, and he said, "Hey, man, I want you to come to Berkeley. I have some friends I want you to meet." Mm-hmm. So it was at Fantasy Studios, uh-huh. right? So he was doing a recording. He was doing a Jimi Hendrix song, right? Castles in the Sand or some shit like that, a Jimi Hendrix song. Mm-hmm. So it was Jimi Hendrix's original producer, Eddie Kramer, I think it was, and then Stanley Clark, bass player, and Tony Williams, right? These guys are jazz giants that have played with Miles Davis, you know?
Right.
And we got to hang out with these guys, you know, because somehow, I don't know how Carlos got me into, like, doing shirt art, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had just been doing it because I was working as a teacher and teaching art here on Trail Hill, you know, at the Trail Hill Neighborhood House.
Right.
Somewhere in between all that, I had got invited by the Miles Davis Estate in New York to show my work with the art of Miles Davis. And this photographer, Annie Leibovitz, right? So they said, "Yeah, man, we love your work, man. We want you to show in the gallery here in New York with Miles and Annie. You'll have one wall, Annie will have another wall, and then Miles will have two walls I said, okay, cool. So that was another thing, you know, that I got to do. It was a great, you know, time. And Carlos has been there all the time for me, man. He's always, you know, giving me financial support to go to these things, you know. And so then besides the guitar stuff and the shirt stuff, he says, hey, man, can we do a mural for my back, for my stages? And I said, yeah, man. So he wanted, so we got a canvas, 20 foot by 40 feet long, one piece of canvas that, he says, can we do a mural? And so that was my first mural for Carlos and his stage shows, right? It was these hands, a red hand and a blue hand, and all these kids in the middle, right? And it ended up being an album cover for Live in South America, his Live in South America album cover. So he would take all these, he would take these murals around the world with him to all these different shows that he'd do. And people loved it, you know. So then he says, hey, man, can we do another mural? I said, yeah. So all in all, I had done four major stage backdrops for him. The last one was Supernatural. See, the last one was
1999?
Maybe, yeah. This was one of them here. I think this was the second one here. This one here, this one's called Embrace Your Absoluteness, right? Where he wanted to honor the African kids and the American Indian kids, you know, and he wanted to use this this image of Christ from Rio, right, on the hill. And so this is what I did for him. And so, of course, you know, because he's Congas, you know. So he was in love with this image here. And then after that, we did this one here. Because he calls me on the phone and he says, can we do another mural? I said, yeah, man. And I said, well, what do you want to do it of this time? He says, well, I got this song called Mumbo Jumbo. So can we do something that with that, those words? I said, yeah. And he says, can you hide the words mumbo jumbo in the art? And put these words in there too. The word trans dance, state of grace, and the zone. What else? And I guess that was it, yeah. State of grace. So so this is the word mumbo jumbo. MUMBO. So that's mumbo. And then the jumbo here, I kind of like jumbled it around. JUMBO. Right? And so when he first saw it, he says, oh man, this is just way up and above what I ever would envision, you know. I said, oh, great. I said, well, I'm getting some posters made of it, Carlos. And he says, yeah, cool, cool. So he was sending the posters to all the people that were going to be on that Supernatural album, right? And then he would call me. He says, hey, man, you're not going to believe this. Everybody's writing lyrics to your art. He says, that's Maria Maria, and that's Turn Your Lights On, and that's whatever, you know, Corazón Espinado. I said, oh, right on. I said, okay, cool. So he calls me again. He says, hey, I got some of the new music. You want to hear it? He used to come to my house all the time, right? Because we both have sons the same age. His son and my son are both the same age. And so we'd get together around about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He would come to my house, to my garage, to hang out with me while I was doing my work. And then by 3 o'clock, we'd take off to get our kids from school, you know, two boys. And he said, well, I got the new music. He says, I said, yeah, well, bring it over, man. I'd like to check it out. So, because he was telling me before this, and this is amazing how Carlos, man, works. We would sit around in my garage. He says, you know, man, I would like to really put some music together that's going to be a little bit more radio friendly. although, you know, I have a lot of success in doing concerts all the time, you know, and shows all over the world, but I had not been on the radio for a long time, you know. And he said, but anyway, so he said, here, put this one on. So it was him and Eric Clapton. And he said, well, what do you think? I said, oh, man, I think you guys got down, really. And so then he put down, then he said, hey, well, put this one on here, Corazón Espinado. I said, oh, man, Carlos, I think you got some radio hits now. These are really fucking rocking. These are rocking tunes. And then he put the one Smooth, that song Smooth. I said, oh, Carlos, man, yeah, you really got some hits here, brother. Get down. And sure enough, man, it won 9 Grammys, right? And so that, I mean, kind of put my work even more on the map, you know? And so I was grateful for all this work that I'd done with Carlos, right? And even till now, you know, people still, they love it, you know? And then there was a time when M&M's Candy called me to do art, to put my art on their packages. And they flew me to New York to meet with the art director and the M&M's people. I had my portfolio, and they said, yeah, we really love what you've done with Santana, you know, and it was a toss-up between you, Peter Max, or this other guy that worked with Andy Warhol, right? But we like where you're coming from, because the theme of our campaign is a groovy summer, right? Sort of like the summer of love here in San Francisco. So, and we know that you're one of those kids from the 60s, just like Carlos is, and we love your psychedelic colors and this and that. So anyway, they hired me to do this art, and they says, we're going to put your signature on 350 million packs of candy. Have you got a problem with that? And I says, I don't think I would have a problem unless some kind of crazy guy would come out of the woodwork trying to track me down for whatever. But no, I don't have a problem with that. So, and he said, this is the first time we're going to ever do this. We've never featured anybody's art on our package, even though our big old M&M is going to be on there. You know, we're going to put your signature on all these packages. I said, wow, that's amazing. He said, you're going to be a household word for a little while. I said, okay, whatever. So I flew back to San Francisco and did two big paintings, 4x8 panels, and sent them back to New York. And so they used one of them. And then, so the art director later on called me and said, hey, man, you know, your art helped boost these sales 21% or 28% or something like that. And so they want you to, fly out to New York to promote the campaign. So they flew me back to New York and got me together with these two celebrities from Los Angeles, who were the Mark and Cindy Brady of the Brady Bunch. You ever heard of that program? So, but I never watched them when I was growing up. I never watched, because by that time I was into all other things and not watching soap operas on TV. But we got together in New York to have dinner with these two folks. You know, there's, you know, movie stars, I guess. And so the guy says, hey, man, I really love your work. I love your work, and I love this, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, well, I'm honored to meet you. And, you know, but, you know, I never really watched a program when I was growing up because I was already into jazz and playing music. And so I never watched TV too much. But I'm honored that we're here doing this, and you're going to help us promote the campaign, right, and talk about me and Carlos, right? So that was a great little experience there, you know, and to me it was off the wall, an off the wall gig all the way, but so cool, you know, whatever. But and then again, Time Magazine called me one time and said, hey, we love your artwork, we're going to do a little story on Santana, and can you send us one of your shirts so we can photograph and use in our little article? And so we did that, you know, and so, again, you know, I'm grateful for all this attention that I've gotten with my work, you know, and starting from way back when I was just, doing things in the mission for whatever I was doing them for. But so now, I'm just going about trying to keep my sensibilities alive, you know, with my work, and I'm grateful that the Port of San Francisco, Aaron Peskin, great friend of mine, the supervisor for North Beach, John Elberling, you know, these are all great champions in my eyes. I mean, it was a couple of years ago that they put together a resolution where they gave me the title San Francisco Artist Emeritus, right?
February 23rd, 2018.
Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, I don't deserve this, you know, because I'm not really, that's not my world, you know. But then they said, well, we think you do. And I said, okay, because I told Aaron, I said, hey, Aaron, you know, with all due respects, I had to look up that word in the dictionary. You know, I says, because that's not a word that's in my vocabulary, right, or that I even knew existed, really. And he said, yeah, well, you know, it's a high honor, it's a high title, you know, right? So, but between Aaron and, again, you know, the Port of San Francisco, they provided me this room to work in, as opposed to, like, where I was before in that little shack, right, down here, right in this next yard. So,
I mean, this resolution, there's this quote that I'm going to read to you, and I think it really speaks to your work throughout more than 50 years, which is, in particular, Michael Rios's many Mission District murals are globally renowned for their inspiring manifestations of the neighborhood's vital Latino soul, as well as the artist's own Chicano heritage.
Well, I have to thank Aaron for being so articulate and putting it in that way, you know, expressing it that way, right, in a statement that way, because, I mean, I never would have said it that way. You know, I'm just grateful that I have the ability and the mind to do it. You know, when I went to City Hall to receive that resolution, you know, whatever it was, so they asked me to speak, you know, I said, well, you know, I'm really grateful to the supervisors here, all you, the Board of Supervisors and City Hall and this and that, the mayor, for giving me this acknowledgement. But in all honesty, it's something that I feel all the artists in the city that are struggling to get, you know, their work noticed deserve, you know. I mean, because I'm not doing my art for any rewards or titles or, you know, or laurels, none of that. No artists don't start off in their world that way, you know. And if rewards come one way or the other, we're grateful, you know. And I mean, most artists, if they're really, really in tune with themselves, they're doing it out of an inner necessity, right, to share their place in life. I mean, so I'm accepting this on behalf of all the artists that I'm in company with. They want to go out there and do murals and educate and inspire folks, right, with art, right? Because to me, the world of culture and art are way high and above the world of politics. You know, the politics, you know, to me, is a down and dirty business. Can get down and dirty business. Although you need politicians, right, to support the arts. You know, we need, you know, big business, you know, right, to always, you know, see the value of art, and that they there should always be some part of their budget that they're gonna, like, you know, use to enhance, you know, their projects. See?
Let me ask you two more questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, that is very important with regards to funding, for example, is what you're saying, that, mm-hmm. you know, artists need money, and rent is in San Francisco astronomical. And while COVID has made it easier to rent, it's because people are fleeing or not able to stay anymore here in San Francisco. And back then, when you were making these murals in the 70s, especially, mm-hmm. there was CIRA, and there were things like Galería de la Raza that were supporting your mural making. But now looking into the future, into the legacy of what you created and others part of the muralismo movement, what are some of those things that need to happen for artists, younger generations, to be able to continue that long tradition of making art in the mission?
Well, I guess there's a few things, you know, to keep things alive, you know, and not let them fade into the history books. I mean, again, you know, because artists, they do their work out of love. I mean, anything beautiful that you're going to create, it's got to come from your own love of your work and what you're going to, how you're going to share this love with your audience, right? And if it's done with love, it's just like food. If you go to a place, you know, and you want a burrito, and the guy does it with love, you know, it's going to feel a lot better eating it. So, you know, art is the same thing. And so, you know, just as time goes by, young artists need to feel that there's encouragement, you know, spiritual encouragement for them to continue doing art and becoming artists, and at the same time that there's enough of an enlightened consciousness in the world of business and corporates, you know, that there's funding for particular projects that an artist might want to do that's relevant and might enhance the, you know, the community. If it's going to be, you know, a mural on particular on a wall of a school or a wall of a, you know, somebody's building, you know, and it's going to, the artist feels right, this will bring a beautiful flavor of color to this particular corner, right? And people have support to do it. Beautiful. See, like the mural that I did over on 24th and Mission Street has been up there for a lot of years. And it's never really been out there. It's never really been retouched or reconditioned, see? So that's one of my issues right now that I hope, you know, comes to some kind of head and comes to a, and before I get too old to go out there with a team to put a brand new face of color on that thing and bring it back to life like it was back when I originally had done it. See, not only there, so I have some unfinished business still here in San Francisco with my old murals, right, that I would love to see come back to life a little bit, like the murals in the mini park.
What do they you need for that to happen?
Well, again, money. It takes money to feel that you have, you know, money to buy the paints, money to buy the scaffolding, and money to pay your help, and a little bit of compensation for your own self to get you through it while you're doing it. You know, all that's, you know, all those ducks have to be in line like that, see? And but I haven't lost hope. I haven't lost hope, see? But if it's not, it doesn't happen in my lifetime, then I'm not going to worry about it because I won't be here to care one way or the other about it. But if people can pick up the slack, you know, and still carry the torch and see, oh, well, even though Michael Reels is not here anymore, you know, there's still the ghost of his mural here. Let's go out there and recondition it and bring it back to life. See, and if that happens, fine, you know, and if I can see this from wherever in heaven I'm looking down at and saying, oh, good, they're doing it, beautiful. But, I mean, art, through thick or thin, through feast or famine, artists still are going to do art. right? If you're really passionate about your work, you're going to find ways to make ends meet and still do your art.
Recently, and you were telling me this a little bit before we started the interview, you've had to endure and to, you have survived a lot of sickness and a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these are very difficult chapters of your life that have happened recently.
Well, I look at it this way. I mean, things can always be better or they could always be worse, you know. So I always find myself in the middle of one thing or the other. I mean, I'm grateful, right, that I've had the energy to, like, work through my physical, you know, handicaps in a way where I'm not totally, you know, handicapped, you know, on crutches or blind or, you know, and I've lost my sense of touch, you know. And but again, I accept myself getting up in age a little bit. You know, I'm 73 years old, and I mean, I have friends, right, that are younger than me that have gone, or they're no longer here, you know. And and I'm still here for whatever reason, I want to make the most of it, right, and continue doing my work and create some value out of it for not only myself, but for people that I'm going to share it with, you know. Because really, I do this for myself, of course, but I also do it for people. My people, you know, my family, extended family, you know, friends and folks that have sort of, like, you know, followed my career in a way, right, to see, oh, what is he going to come up with next? What is he, what's he thinking these days? Well, you know, it's not anything overly important, you know, but just like everybody else, you know, if you live in a world, you're not in a vacuum, you know. You live in company with other folks, right, that are trying to figure it out also, just like you are.
To conclude, now that we're speaking about, you know, in a sense, the work that you're doing still and the legacy that mm-hmm. you're going to keep having and creating, what would be a lesson that you could give the present and future generations of artists that are inspired by your life and work about seizing opportunities and moments?
Well, two words. You know, I use these two words, right, to title the mural that we did up there of Centena. Aspire to inspire. You know, it should be your aspiration is to inspire people with your life and your work, right? And to inspire them to what? To a little bit more higher consciousness. See, because that's what it takes for the entire world to come a little bit closer to the notion of world peace, right? And happiness, right? If you can, if it's your continuous, you know, aspirations. If you constantly feel like you're constantly an aspiring human being, an aspiring artist, to want to inspire people with your work, then something good comes out of that, right? And I think that's what I think would be my my simple expression to folks. You know, continue to aspire to inspire with your work, right? If your work is going to take on, have any kind of value, or also on another thing is the two words, value creation, right? Create value with your life and your work, right? Work that has, you know, spiritual value, you know, value that has, you know, meat and potato spiritual value, you know. But life is continuous and eternal, you know. Even though, you know, it's like an old pair of shoes. After a while, you got to take them off and put on a new pair of shoes. You know, our life and our body's like that, see. But your real life is something that'll never, never die. You know, it's like you can say to yourself, I've always been here and I've always will be. You know, it might not be here on this particular earth, right? It might be someplace else in the universe or some other dimension of life, you know. That's good because, you know, the more you learn, well, life is like an infinite, you know, multifaceted dimensions. There are multifaceted dimensions of life, right? On all kinds of different levels, you know. And so we might be living in this one particular dimension of life right now, but there are other simultaneous dimensions of life, you know, intermixing right now with us that we're because of our limited senses and sensibilities, you know, can't really be, are not in tune with them, you know. Maybe if you believe, right, that you you have a third eye, you know, you have a third eye, and sometimes in your dreams, right, you go to these other dimensions, then that makes you realize that, yeah, we do, there's more than just one dimension that we live in life, right? And sometimes that kind of vision, because, you know, your third eye is to see your inner universe, right? The eyes that we see, we're talking with each other right now are the, you know, right, this dimension, you know? But there's other dimensions, right? They're deep, you know, and mysterious too, that are out there, that are here with us here and now, you know. And, you know, as we go through life, man, the more sensitive you can become, right, to feeling those kind of energies, the more you feel you're really, really in tune with the universe, you know, and the multi-universes, right, that we may go in and out of, right? So, because you think, well, there must have been another universe that this universe is born from. And when this universe, you know, has its lifetime, then another universe is going to be born out of it. See? So, it's that kind of thing, I guess. That's kind of talking on an ethereal kind of like level, you know, right? It has nothing to do with here and now, but at the same time, for me it does in a way, because I like to think that although I have one foot on Earth, the other foot is out there in the universe, you know? And thank you, gentlemen, because it's always a pleasure to sit and have an intelligent conversation, whether it's talking about me and my work or, I mean, the next time we can talk about your work and your work. See, it's all, to me, it's all equal, right? We're all here in it together for some reason, doing what we do, you know, and I guess the bottom line would be for education and inspiration.
We appreciate you sharing a lot today, and, you know, as you say, aspire to inspire. I think, fortunately, this is what that is. It's a record of your first person account. Like, this is your life and your work, and I think you are still continuing to aspire to inspire. And we just are honored to be able to help tell your story.
Well, I'm honored. I'm honored that we're doing this together. I really am, because you know, it gives me encouragement, right? That I'm not out there in the wilderness, like I might feel sometimes in this building, right, with nobody around us and nobody can visit me, you know, more or less, because we're so off the beaten track, you know, in a way. But it won't always be like that, you know.
True. With his freewheeling passion for art and a lifetime of dedication to serving the community through it, Michael Rios stands as an exemplary Chicanx artist of our time. His long-standing murals continue to beautify the Mission District while elevating and educating public consciousness to include the rich intricacies of Chicanx history and culture.
By making his art explicitly accessible, he has inspired generations of artists and average people to seek meaning and enlightenment amongst the oppressively mundane.
I mean, there was a time, say, when before the COVID thing, they would have open studios in the city. And so this building, all the artists in the building, right, would gear up for those 2 days, at the weekends that we would do it, open our doors up and have people come through, right, and see what everybody does, you know. Hope we can get back to those days.
Hopefully soon.
But if we got our shots, we're getting close.
Should I cut?
This oral history of Michael Rios was a collaborative effort, like murals also are. The team behind it was
Sofia Marina,
who served as audio and content editor,
Erica Gengzi,
Maisa Plunk-Graham,
who served as executive producers,
Javier Briones,
Kevin Carr,
Chad Curver,
Carrie Cordova,
Stephanie Garces,
Melissa San Miguel.
And it was produced and mixed by me, Camilo Garzón. The Mission Murals project was organized by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and funded by the Institute for Museum and Library Services. Thanks for listening.
Ha ha ha.